Hey, what's going on? This is the Educated Guest Podcast, and I'm Justin, your host. Hey, if this is your very first time listening, I just want to say thank you first and foremost for becoming part of this community. And you might be wondering, you know, what is it that you're actually joining? And, you know, if you clicked on this, then you might have read the brief description of this being a virtual art school, but you might be wondering if you're anything like us, like, how does this actually work? And what I'll do is I'll break it down into the three core pillars that organize all that we do and we've been doing for the past 2.5 years. The first pillar is all about the development of the mind of a multidisciplinary artist. You know, there's so many different things that focus on the specialty and specialized learning and transactional learning that we focus instead on transformational learning. So that's number one. The second pillar is called work study, and that is our pillar focused on developing and delivering the tools, the tactics, the techniques that are actually needed to work as an artist and designer in the modern age. And last but not least, we have our well-read segment. And in this segment, this is historically what we've become known for around the world, is we bring on stories both in monologue and dialogue format of people who have done things in an adverse way, in a multidisciplinary way, in a way that is truly outlying or being in an outlier truly to the rest of the current of art and design practice. So what we do is that we go and have hour-long conversations with those who run their own studios, who are currently in the jobs that many people want to get, and also who maybe launched their own brands independent of their work in the service capacity. And what it's doing is that we hope to help you stay inspired and stay encouraged as you sort of swim upstream in your fight to express yourself in the sport that is art and design. So those things said, if you want more content like this, then feel free to go to educated-guest.com and subscribe to our email newsletter. Also, you can go to @educated_guests on Instagram and follow us there, talk back to us there directly, and we'll be sure to continue the conversation. We love stuff like this. All right, so that said, today is another segment of our well-read piece and series. And given the fact that well-read was based on initially the spirit of the rebel, the spirit of the outlier, the spirit of the outcast or the outlaw. And outcast, outlaw is not in the negative context as if people are anarchists, but instead, these are the people who have nonlinear trajectories and nonlinear stories into practicing at a very, very high level when it comes to expression through art and design. So what we have done and what we continue to do is to not only talk directly to these people, but we also share independent psychoanalytic and sort of biographical perspectives on the people that you read about, the people that you see, and maybe you've never read about them or you've never seen them. And which is that's even more important, because what we're trying to do is introduce you into a world where you don't feel like the only person trying to do something different. You don't feel like the only person trying to take a nonlinear approach to your career. Maybe your mom, maybe your dad, maybe your friends, maybe your professors, maybe your whoever is that adversary in your life that says you need to take steps 1, 2, 3 to get to where you want to go. What we are hoping to do is provide a different avenue, a different example. And what we've done is provide 150 plus hours of examples and stories to support this claim. And today is no different. Today we're continuing with a particularly special analysis and sort of declarative, descriptive monologue on one of my personal inspirations historically to kick off the newfound energy of taking a different approach to practicing art design, and as well as many of the modern approaches to starting brands, being art directors, being creative directors. Like, he is one of the key pieces of the puzzle. And who we're talking about today is Dimna Gavassalia. And if you're not familiar with Dimna's work, if you're not familiar with the name, if you're not familiar with anything having to do with fashion, if you don't care about fashion, this is the perfect place for you. Not so much because we're trying to coach you on what you should know about fashion, but instead, if you care about expression, if you care about breaking down molds, breaking barriers in whatever your profession is, then you'll want to know the name Dimna Gavasalia. So the first thing I want to do is talk a little bit about Dimna's story as I understand it and as we've studied it over the years in sort of three epochs of time. I never know how to pronounce that word, but what we're talking about is three sort of categorical time frames. The first of which is trying to set the scene of Dimna's life pre-Marjilla. So pre-Marjilla. And next, I want to set the scene of Dimna's life and practice and artistic expression publicly during Marjilla time frame. And then afterwards, I want to set the scene of possibly where he's going afterwards. So what that's going to do is place us from probably his childhood years to roughly 2000, 2006, and then 2007, 2006-ish to roughly 2014, 2012, something around there, all the way from 2014 to present. So it begs the question about, well, what does he do? And what is he known for? And if you're interested in anything to do with streetwear, if you're interested in anything having to do with design, then you might recognize the brand name Vetements. And if you're interested in modern design, then you might also recognize a few other names of Marjilla, of Ider Ackerman, of Dries Van Noten, of anything LVMH, just in general, these sorts of brand names having to do with mostly European brands that have really, really changed Balenciaga, changed the way that they are touching the rest of the world and the way that they, the relationship with pop culture. And if you're interested in that movement over the past, you know, I would say probably, I mean, going back to like when Nigo was making, you know, Bape hoodies and Bape t-shirts, dating back to the, you know, LRG days, RIP, is like, you are very, then you must understand the trajectory of who are the key tentpole players to hold up that tent of everything people have been experiencing over the past 15 years. So what I'll do is I'll talk briefly about what I understand of Dimna's childhood to 2006, which is roughly puts him at a roughly like 23 years old, roughly. So born in Soviet Georgia, can you imagine being born into a civil war and living and growing up knowing that your country is at odds with itself publicly, not just privately because people are racist or people are, you know, xenophobic or people are very partial and partisan. However, you are literally at war. And growing up in that environment, I'm going to skip over a large portion of his childhood because I don't know him personally. I don't know too much about him in that regard. But I'd want to start curiously at his decision to study economics in undergrad. I think this is a particular footnote for everyone out there who might study some non-traditional, you know, undergraduate major or study something that has nothing to do with art and design, and someone along the way try to tell you you're not creative. And if you think about, he didn't just like drop out. He didn't drop out of college. He didn't do anything crazy. Like, he was just, not that dropping out of college is crazy. He went through the full 4 years and majoring in economics, he made a decision at age 21, 22, not sure how old he actually was, but at college graduation age to basically take a left turn and say, no, I don't like this. I'm going to do something different because the trajectory of my career at the current rate requires that I need to do something different. At the time, you kind of put this at age, you know, roughly 2002, if you kind of work backwards, roughly 2002, 2003, he's decided at that point that he wants to go study fashion. So he studies fashion at the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in Belgium. And this is a curious place because Maison Martin Marjilla was actually studying there. And Ider Ackerman is also an alum. These are different people who came out of this same school. in Antwerp, Belgium. So it's curious that you leave your country to go study somewhere else after already having gotten an undergraduate degree, and you decide to go pursue this passion. But if you notice, the curious story is that often gets forgotten is that he's not a childhood prodigy. He's not someone that, to my knowledge, comes from a background of second, third, fourth generation artists. He's not someone who was born into, you know, well-off means. He was born into a civil war in a country that is gorgeous from all that I know about it. And however, is facing some significant social and political challenges. So you consider all those things, and maybe what we're hoping to have come through, if you consider all those things, then you might be placing yourself in some sort of curious arrangement to those circumstances as well. So if you find yourself in any of those similar circumstances, then maybe you can relate to the need to sort of make a left turn and to fearlessly and perhaps bravely, instead of fearlessly, bravely approach that left turn and with confidence, with a need, with a desire to do something different with your life. So that's the lesson in that first sort of epoch of time. So if you place yourself again in 2004, 2005, when he's graduating undergrad, and you kind of move and paint this image, this imaginary scenario of him going to Royal Academy of Fine Arts, you have to imagine that by making this left turn, there was no turning back. To be someone who moves from economics to fashion design, you have to love what it is you're about to get into, love what it is you have to do, because you're essentially starting over from scratch. And that's, I think, the thing that most people here are terrified of starting over from scratch. Most people here are terrified of learning at the very beginning again, starting, being a beginner. We've talked about that before, about what it means to be a beginner every day. And that's why our slogan, catchphrase, tagline, what have you, is still learning, because the more and more you can situate yourself with the desire and the necessity to always become a beginner, then you don't overthink the decisions you know are right for you. So he goes back to school, graduates in roughly 2005, 2006. And at this point in time, he starts to work at Maison Margiela. And Margiela, if you think about it, in 2006, is not what Margiela is known to be in 2012, 2013, 2014, and on. Mainly because of the very spirit that Demna was able to bring to this brand. Granted, it's not LVMH. You think about it, LVMH is this huge conglomerate, and Margiela is one brand. And it's essentially named after one person. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, it might have been comparable to what Off-White is in the grand scheme. So many people might wonder why Virgil would take a deal with LVMH when he has Off-White and these sorts of things. It's just here. It's a difference in scale. It's a different animal, different beast. So at the time you think about it, you have this upstart brand, still making good waves, great enough that you could work underneath someone. So he worked underneath Margiela for a number of years and pretty much brought this aesthetic to Margiela at the time that was honestly very, very unconventional to Paris fashion at the time. So you think about Paris fashion in 2005, 2006. This is pre-Instagram, like very early stages of Facebook. This is still old school marketing. You know, like you think it's just now starting to, Twitter's just now coming out, but many brands aren't really advertising or necessarily marketing themselves over Twitter at the time. So you really think about, this is just old school fashion. This is not Instagram. This is not influencer marketing. The only form of influencer marketing at the time is literally just having David Beckham wear your stuff. And David Beckham's in a official photo shoot, or paparazzi catches him. And the only people that knew what he was wearing are people who work in fashion or people who can afford the stuff right then. And there was no aftermarket. There's no StockX. There's no Grail. There's none of that. So if you think about this at the time, it's quite incredible that he was able to still articulate a certain perspective that was unique to his circumstances. Again, if you consider the spirit of a civil war upon birth or during your adolescent years, that carries with you. Those experiences carry throughout your entire footprint and, you know, fingerprint throughout the rest of your practice. So don't ignore, the second lesson here is, do not ignore your experiences at your youth. Do not ignore your experiences throughout your adolescent years, because those are markers of so many different indications of what you were meant to say to the world through your work. So you think about his time in Marzilla. This is curiously when, you know, sort of Kanye West starts becoming introduced into the fold. You start seeing Kanye wearing what I'm about to mention. And I mentioned previously about Vetements, and Vetements is a brand that Demna launched alongside his brother and many other people as sort of a collective to reduce the pressure of needing to beat or sort of have a finality and permanence in the scale and the level of like a Gucci or a Prada or these sort of legacy brands. Instead, he wanted something that was a free form flow of expression that could allow his own ideas to exist in the pocket that they needed to. So if you think about, this brand was launched in 2014. Again, timeline. He started working at Marzilla in 2006. He'd made the decision that to stop the trajectory of economics in 2003, 2004, something like that, 2002. And it took literally 12 years before it was time to launch his own unique expression. So the third lesson in this lecture is to not ignore the value of apprenticeship, even if your apprenticeship is with, you know, a well-respected brand like Marzilla. Marzilla's getting a lot of press, not mainly, but stateside. I know a lot of people that did not know what Marzilla was until you start being mentioned in hip hop. A lot of people had no idea what Marzilla was. And it was mainly around the time of like Watch the Throne is a seminal moment for both fashion's introduction to American culture, or particularly American pop culture and hip hop culture and street culture, you know, street skate and basketball, that sort of realm of, or excuse me, surf, skate and basketball, which is sort of the triad of streetwear. You start introducing that to that culture. That happened via Kanye West and Jay-Z, both in sort of in Watch the Throne, but also at Yeezus, when you had this sort of introduction of the masks. That was a pop culture icon. And this is a direct reflection of the work, the artistic direction, and the mind of not only Marzilla, but also Demna. So I've said a lot thus far, but hopefully you're getting a spirit of who Demna is and who, in terms of his work and also his importance in sort of the recent canon of not only fashion, but also art and creative practice ad nauseum. So the second thing, another thing that I want to mention as we approach sort of the third epic of time, to round out this sort of second epic of how we understand and how we might categorize and come to understand Demna's progression as an artist and his sort of legacy thus far as an artist and designer, creative director, we must address the fact that the apprenticeship is key. He was able to leverage the experiences through the apprenticeship, but we also have yet to mention how old he was. Demna was not a young person in the sense of being 21, 23, 25. I've mentioned this before, but Demna was a grown man at the time. A grown man choosing to apprentice, serve as not an apprentice, but work under someone else in someone else's brand. That says so much about the character and sort of the spirit of him as a human, and also as a spirit of him as what he expects and the lineage he respects, the sort of stepping stones he respects in in creativity, in art, and his ability to willingness to learn before launching his own, partially due probably to finances as well. It takes a lot of money to launch a brand at that scale, but also just due to the sheer fact of proximity, relational value, and brand recognition and brand name recognition. So you think about it, that was 7 years. If he came out of his master's program in 2005, 2006, then that means that he's probably 26 years old at the time, 25 years old when he starts working with Margiela. And because you work at Margiela for 7 years, you're 35 years old when Vetements is launched in 2014. So if you think about that, many people are trying to launch things when they're 22, 23, and not too often are those things successful long term. And I would be willing to go out on a limb and posit that it's not having to do with the talent level. He probably could have launched a brand 5 years earlier, and it's probably not due to the finances too much either, but it's a particular opinion that you want to have be known. And it's also a particular scale of that opinion to be known. Had he launched Vetements before working with Kanye, who's to say that that would be as successful as it was? Who's to say that that relational value would be equally as important as the product itself? So this sort of strategic thinking was incredibly important, and in my mind is still incredibly important to the development of all careers. So to go to the third epic as we understand his career, recently he stepped down from Vetements, and I believe his brother is running the company now out of Zurich instead of Paris. And as a result, you have this lineage that's left behind to say that pretty much this experience, this sort of collective of Vetements and their role as a creative unit was never meant to be as permanent as others might think of launching a brand and you have to stay with this brand forever and this is your calling card. This is a perfect example. And another lesson here in his story is that you don't have to hold on to a brand if you don't want to. Of course, he still has ownership stake, I'm sure. But to be creative director of one idea for the rest of your life, that's like only rap in a certain way, or only singing a certain way, or only playing one sport. So if you think about this sort of 2014 to 2019 to 2020, there's a couple of footnotes that are worth mentioning about what Vetements stood for, what it still stands for as it continues to run, to my understanding, what he was able to do as, you know, creative director of Balenciaga, the monumentality of that experience and what that means both for culture as a whole and what he said while he had that platform and I believe he still has that platform, if I'm not mistaken, is incredibly important. So in October 2015, Demna actually replaced Alexander Wang as creative director for Balenciaga. And most people don't know what that means, or most people don't really know who Alexander Wang is. And most people think, oh, Alexander Wang was creative director of Balenciaga. I thought he had his own brand. And both are true. Yes and yes. So very similar is that, again, it's an idea of scale. Much in the same way that Virgil has Off-White, He also accepted the art director role for menswear at Louis Vuitton. So you have these sorts of decisions to be made in your career. So at the time, he chooses with Vetements pretty much at its peak, or peaking, learning to peak, is that he chooses to take on this role at Balenciaga. And the key thing is that he, alongside Virgil, alongside again Haider Ackermann, or alongside to a degree Kanye at the time, is like, you are bringing a different type of aesthetic, a different type of Jerry Lorenzo, I would throw right in there, and you're bringing a different type of attitude to high fashion. So in the same way that many people know about Off-White, many people know about Virgil's approach, Virgil's had museums, Demna could also have a museum and show, ironically, a lot of the same work, the masks. He could show the concert attire, the fashion that was worn during the Yeezus tour. He could show a lot of Yeezy Season 1. A lot of this stuff was directly as a result of him being also a part of that work and that working convention. So at the time, if you think back to 2015, 2016, this is the Triple S. This is the not only just the return of the dad shoe, but it's incredibly potent opinion on the dad shoe. So you also have, you know, the Yeezy 750s, I believe. So the numbers always confuse me. The basically dad shoe version of the 750 of the Yeezy, but you also have the Triple S coming out. You have, and those are kind of the two seminal silhouettes at the time in 2015, 2016 to hit the runway and be important because everything else kind of followed. And we've been on a dad shoe wave ever since. And as a result, you have this wave of unconventional advertising. You have this wave of hosting fashion shows in unconventional areas and unconventional locations. You have tongue-in-cheek metal-inspired hoodies. This is the aesthetic that many people wore and had from 2015 to 2017, where ripped jeans, oversized hoodies, you know, heavy metal-inspired t-shirts and apparel. And now many people remember the Balenciaga basic t-shirt where they worked with World Food Program and donated over $250,000, which is curiously low considering the scale of Balenciaga, but nonetheless, this is still a good deed, and I really, really do support the work of World Food Program. Download their app if you haven't had a chance to, and simply make sure that people can eat across the world. That's incredibly important. I've done it before. I would highly encourage you to do that. Just download the app World Food Program. So all of these things, and he kind of topped it all off with his reworking of the IKEA bag in a luxury format, kicked off this widespread storm of others recognizing, oh, the IKEA bag is actually kind of cool. So let me do something with it. And that was a whole thing. So to round out these sort of three epics, hopefully you've had a chance to sort of understand not just the work of Demna and just all these different roles he's played, but also to put his work into context, to sort of meditate on his life story to date as still a young person. And hopefully you can learn some lessons about strategic moves to make, how quickly, you know, time passes, but also how slow it moves and how to prepare for what's next as current things are happening. Imagine being in 2014, 2015, knowing that you potentially were going to leave Vetements one day, but that day was 5 years out. And during that period of time, you had the opportunity to share Balenciaga. You had the opportunity to share your opinion at a high level at all different phases. So these sorts of things are all happening before he's 40, if I'm not mistaken. If you do the math, I think he's probably 39. And to do all of that before 40 is an incredible feat. And I don't believe that the part I love the most and the part we wanted to share the most is the fact that he's not a childhood prodigy. He's not someone that, to our understanding, again, grew up in wealth, grew up from a background that's incredibly privileged, grew up knowing fashion at age 12. I'm sure he knew how to dress, but knowing how things were constructed at age 12. I'm very unsure and I'm very uncertain that that was the case. So to, again, have a story of someone who was able to articulate incredible amounts of perspective at a high level in an unconventional way and sort of change the way high fashion was done alongside four or five other people across the globe from the time of 2014 to roughly 2019, you see just how incredibly important his work is and his body of work and his messaging for how we live life, how we study, how we practice. And it's worth knowing his name, it's worth knowing his story, and I hope you enjoyed learning about it. I encourage you to go dig more into his story, his work, his aesthetic and see how it's maybe come up in your life, into your daily practice, into your daily mood boards. I'm sure it's made its way there. And if you want more information like this, then you can go to educated-guests.com and subscribe to our email newsletter, and also at educated_guests on Instagram. And just follow and talk with us there. I think you'll find some incredible pieces of information, some incredible pieces of content, and some incredible relations to be made there. So highly encourage it. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, peace.